So a fallacy is an error, and logical is just having to do with thinking. So a logical fallacy is just an error in thinking. And here's the crazy thing. We all do it, right? We all do it. We just might not know that we're doing it because we were never taught the words, the grammar or the language, the definitions, right? So I'm going to give you kind of how we got to our modern day education system and then tell you when they removed critical thinking from our school system here. The good news is this is such a fun thing to learn as a family. When you can critically think, you can see truth so much easier than people who can't. You won't ride the emotional roller coaster. You won't be caught up in propaganda. You won't get caught up in groupthink. You scroll through social media and you'll be able to recognize immediately when somebody's just trying to appeal to your emotions, when somebody's just trying to get you emotional and spun up. It's like it kind of evens everything out. You know who to listen to, what voices are true, and you know which ones are just there for an agenda. It just makes things very, very clear.
My friends, I am thrilled to host Kathy Gibbons in this podcast episode all about critical thinking. Let me tell you, I learned a lot talking to Kathy, and I've got some post-its I'm planning to put up around the house to remind myself to ask my kids some more questions. I've got a new podcast, Kathy's, that I cannot wait to listen to with my kids. And I just have some goals. I have some goals for the way I want to talk to my kids, the way I want my kids to talk to me, and really truly some new parenting direction that is similar to what I always believed, but Kathy helped dial it in. Oh my goodness. Kathy Gibbons is a homeschool mom who first learned about logical fallacies along with her seventh grade daughter. She quickly realized that this little taught skill is essential for navigating all the crazy messages we are being bombarded with by culture. In 2021, Kathy launched the Filter It Through a Brain Cell podcast, where she teaches critical thinking in short, fun episodes and is passionate about helping the next generation learn to think well. It sounds like Kathy is also going to be a season 3 Life Skills Now summer camp leader, and I'm absolutely thrilled that she'll get to talk to your teens and tweens. So you get to know Kathy today, get some inspiration by her podcast here with me on critical thinking, and then definitely look forward to the June 2024 season 3 Life Skills Now Life Skills Now summer camp, where Kathy will also get to talk to your teens. Let's jump right into the episode. Kathy, thank you so much for being here today. I love your title of everything you do, Filter It Through a Brain Cell. My gosh, critical thinking is so important. I can't wait to hear more from you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, let's start out with a little bit of your story. Like, how did you become interested in learning logic and critical thinking? And by the way, what did you do before this was your jam?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So the way that I got into this, I never, if you had asked me 10 years ago, I never thought I would be having a podcast, especially teaching logic and critical thinking. But we're a homeschool family. I have a daughter. She is now 16. She's a junior in high school. But when she was in seventh grade, that was the school year 2019-2020, right? And we all know what happened in 2020. Everything kind of went crazy. So the second semester, part of her curriculum, one of the books that she was reading, and we homeschool, but we're part of a homeschool community. So I was directing, I was leading her class of about 12 kids. So 12 seventh graders. And they had to read a book called The Fallacy Detective. And it was all about logical fallacies. Well, I had never heard of logical fallacies before. I didn't know what they were. And of course, I was directing the class, so I had to read the book as well. And it was so fascinating. It was so interesting. Like, I was into it. The kids were into it. They were calling them out. You teach a middle or high schooler logical fallacies and get ready because they're going to call you on it. Like, that was a red herring. That was an ad hominem. Because they, once they learn it, they have it. So what was so interesting is even though it was just an introduction to logical fallacies, it gave them some language. It gave them some tools. And watching these kids go through all the craziness of 2020, because of course we had, you know, the pandemic, we had the lockdowns, then came the fact checkers online and all that stuff. And then we roll into the 2020 election, and watching these kids who had even a little bit of skill in learning how to think well and learning how to determine if something's true or not true, they went through that so differently than their peers. And really, the main thing that they had was just a little bit of education about filtering these messages, filtering them through a brain cell, right? Where I get my title from. I thought, oh my goodness, if the rest of the world had this skill of being able to think, we might not be in the place that we're at as a country. And people's emotional health and their mental health might be in a much better place because they're not getting constantly tumbled emotionally on this wheel of constant, you know, we're getting constantly bombarded by messages. And if you don't know how to think well about them, you just go down all these rabbit trails and it's really rough. And so anyways, I thought, I need to teach this. So I started the podcast and I love it. We're over 200 episodes in now and it's going great. And it just has been, it makes me very happy that critical thinking people are realizing how important this is. And it's actually simple and super fun to learn.
Way to go. 200 episodes in like 2 or 3 years. It took me 5 years to hit 200. So you've been busy.
I've been busy. Yes, it's good. It's been good.
I'm enamored by that story that just a little education made such an impact for these young people. And I can see why you sort of fell so headfirst into this. What I love that you just said, though, is that critical thinking could help people's mental health.
Yes.
I don't think a lot of people are waving that banner. And that is an amazing perspective. And I think so true, because it's going to reduce your anxiety and make you feel like you're more in control. Yeah.
100%. And this is why I believe critical thinking skills are so life-changing, because number one, when you can filter the messages that you're getting and you can recognize, well, that's propaganda or that's just marketing or whatever the messaging is, now you have a footing to stand on. Otherwise, it's kind of like you get blown back and forth. No, it's this, it's whoever is more emotional or whoever can shout the loudest is kind of who wins, so to speak, in the social media world and in the marketing world. But that's not good for us as the end user to constantly just be listening to shouting and outrage and whoever can get the most angry and make you feel the worst wins. That's a really rough way to go emotionally and mentally. And when you can learn to think well, it just steadies all that out. And you don't have to ride that roller coaster with the rest of society.
You know, I've done a lot of reading about critical thinking and thinking about critical thinking. I've tried to impart this to my kids. But one thing I've never actually done is have the education in all those cool vocabulary terms, those words that you used. And I do think it's helpful for kids to have labels, you know, to put on truths. So how do you define what you just called a logical fallacy, something like cognitive bias and propaganda? Those are three big terms. You can take them one at a time.
I know they're very big words, but when you break them down, it makes it actually really simple. So a fallacy or a logical fallacy. So a fallacy is an error and logical is just having to do with thinking. So a logical fallacy is just an error in thinking. And here's the crazy thing. We all do it. Right. We all do it. We just might not know that we're doing it because we were never taught the words, the grammar or the language, the definitions. Right. But once you have the definitions, and I'm telling you, these kids, especially, they pick them up so fast. They learn them. They recognize them. They know them. And once they have it, they have it. So it does help them to organize it, to label it and to have it. So and the thing that I didn't realize, because that book that we read, there was about 30 different ones that they taught us there. There's over 300 different named logical fallacies. This is why I can have so many episodes, because season one is just all logical fallacies, right? I'm not going to cover all 300 because some of them get very nuanced, and this is what the philosophers argue and debate about. And I'm not in it for that. But so that's a logical fallacy. It's just an error in thinking. Now, propaganda. Propaganda are different tactics that are used to manipulate people mentally and emotionally. And we see this happening in governments, in ad campaigns, in a lot of different places we're seeing propaganda. And then the third one is a cognitive bias or a mental bias. So cognitive or mental has to do with thinking. And then bias has to do with the way that we view the world. So a cognitive bias is just something about us or something about the way we see the world that affects our ability to think well or to think critically. Now, a lot of times biases get a bad rap, and rightfully so, because a lot of our biases keep us from being able to see an opposing viewpoint and even consider it. But that, so there's a balance, because that being said, we all also have biases inherently, and we can't not have them. For instance, I'm a wife, I'm a woman, I'm a mother, I'm a homeschool mom. All these things are very true about me and they affect how I see the world. I can't not see the world through these things because this makes me who I am. So our biases are going to be there. We do need to know them. We need to challenge them sometimes and realize that the rest of the world is seeing through their biases as well. So I just felt like those would be a few helpful definitions to start off with.
They're super helpful. And I got to tell you, my son, who's 18, just called me out on the sunk cost logical fallacy the other day, because as an entrepreneur, you're always making decisions on what projects are worth tackling. And it's so hard for me not to say, but I've spent so much time on this already, I should finish it. But I've spent so much money. And so, yeah, there's this sunk cost logical fallacy that basically says, yeah, that makes sense, except that it doesn't. Technically, you should make the decision based on the project moving from this moment forward, and who cares what happened in the past. And like, it's incredibly difficult, even once you see it, to say, oh, I do need to stop doing that. And and here I am, you know, I went through a school education. I did I was quite successful in school. And of all the words that we've been talking about so far, propaganda is the only one I was ever taught in school. Yeah. Why are schools not teaching this stuff? It's so cool.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a cool history. So I'm going to give you kind of how we got to our modern day education system and then tell you when they removed critical thinking from our school system here in the United States. So way back in the 1800s, Prussia, so the country that is kind of where Germany's at now, was their whole economy was based on their soldiers, on their war. They were really good. They won all the time. And so they would rent out their soldiers to other countries because they were known for winning. And that's how this country made their money. Well, in 1806, they lost a devastating battle to Napoleon. And the king of Prussia was like, oh, no, this is really bad, because if word gets out that we lost, our economy is going to tank because other countries aren't going to want to pay us for our army anymore. So they did a study or whatever. They looked into what had happened. Why did we lose this battle? And they came back. And the conclusion was that the soldiers were picking and choosing which generals they were going to listen to and which orders they were going to follow. They were thinking for themselves. Well, my husband used to be in the army, and they have a saying that's called salute and execute, which means if you're given an order, you salute and say, yes, sir, and you go do it. You don't sit there and think, well, I don't know. Is this a good idea? You know, like, you, in order for an army to work well, you just kind of have to do what you're told, is kind of how they work, especially when you're in a battle. So he got his scholars together and said, all right, we need to devise a method so that when these men come to be of fighting age, that they won't think for themselves, that they will obey orders. And so what they did is they created what we know of now as the modern day education system, where the kids come in at four and, you know, four or 5 years old, and they kind of go through these different stages with their peers, and there's a teacher and they're taught to listen. In fact, they called it obedience school. How crazy is that? Well, it worked. It produced good soldiers. It produced good workers, good, you know, people in the factories and all that. And so other countries sent representatives to go check it out and bring it back because they wanted good soldiers and good workers and good employees as well. So Horace Mann from the United States is the one who went and brought it back. And the parents here in the United States wanted nothing to do with it. They showed up in Massachusetts at the schoolhouse with guns saying, no, we don't want this obedience school or factory type of school, because that's kind of what it was seen as, is you're putting children on a factory and producing a end result. Well, we got it. This is what we all know as our modern day education system. And we have it now. In the beginning of our country, logic was held very high. Like, it was a skill that was seen to be very important. However, in the 1900s, in the early 1900s, whoever was in charge of the education system at the time, they decided it wasn't socially important as other things. And so they didn't outlaw it, but they just started removing it as a requirement in our American education system. And that is why most people, there are some schools out there who will still have a logic class and who still teach it, but it's not part of our required education system. And therefore, most schools do not teach it. You have to go to college and go to philosophy or something like that to really get a good class on this, or it's an elective. It's crazy how it's just not considered socially important. Yet we look around today and we see, wow, socially, this would be actually really important to have this skill.
It feels really heavy to me.
It does feel heavy.
Yeah, like, I'm really unhappy about that whole thing. Like, I wish the people with the guns had One.
Right? I know. Well, the good news is, here's the good news. So I will not just leave it there. The good news is, this is such a fun thing to learn as a family. And that's why I started my podcast, because I'm like, if people really, I think we're so intimidated because us as parents, like I was in my 40s when I learned this. I didn't know. I thought, how can I teach my child critical thinking? It sounds so hard. Logic, I don't know anything about this. But when you actually dive in, it's actually a lot of fun. The kids pick it up really, really quickly. They do really well with it. And so, yeah, I just want to encourage families. The best way to learn this is right alongside your kids, and you will have a lot of fun with it. And you'll have some really good family discussions as well.
I think just the awareness that there is like what feels like a curriculum, not that there's a curriculum, but there's actually a process to learning critical thinking. It's not just kind of what I thought it used to be. What I used to think it was is just, hey, make sure your kids can think deeply. Make sure they look at different sides of the story. You know, I just sort of had this like in the clouds perspective of critical thinking, but the fact that there are terms you can learn and ideas you can teach in a logical order, and someone else has written all this out for you. It's not, you know, it's not just a way of thinking that doesn't have any structure. I think that's that awareness is really important for parents.
Yep.
Let's stick with the positive. How do you see life as easier or better for people who do have this critical thinking skill?
Yeah. And again, I'll go back to, there's probably a lot of different ways that we could go with this, but I'll just say, keep it super simple and go back to the emotional and the mental. When you can critically think, you can see truth so much easier than people who can't. You won't ride the emotional roller coaster. You won't be caught up in propaganda. You won't get caught up in groupthink. You'll scroll through social media and you'll be able to recognize immediately when somebody's just trying to appeal to your emotions, when somebody's just trying to get you emotional and spun up, and it's like it kind of evens everything out. You know who to listen to, what voices are true, and you know which ones are just there for an agenda. It just makes things very, very clear.
I love that. And I think that is attractive to anyone. On the flip side, we can't stay positive forever because the world is as it is.
Yes.
What do you see, Kathy, as the biggest threats to critical thinking today?
Yes. So I'm going to give you three of them. So number one, I've touched on the first one already, emotionalism. Right now, our society is so wrapped up in emotionalism. If you feel it, it must be true. Or if whoever can get you the most emotional, or whoever gets the most emotional, is somehow the winner because they're the most emotional, or because, right? Or they're trying to get you angry. If I can get you angry, I can get you to do this. Or if I can get you guilty, I can get you to believe this or do this. And so emotionalism, when people put their emotions as being the most important thing about them and the most important thing that guides their decision-making process, you're in trouble. Because physiologically, the way that we're built in our brain, so all of our stimulus comes in through the base of our brain in the back. Well, all of our logical thinking happens in the front of our brain, kind of behind our forehead. Guess where our emotions are? Right in the middle. So anything that comes to us goes to our emotions first before we're able to think logically. And so that's why this appeal to emotions works so well, is because it kind of stops the thinking from happening. And so when we learn to think well, it reduces that emotionalism, which then increases our ability to just think about something before we jump on the emotional reaction bandwagon. So that's number one. Number two is relativism. We are living in, and our kids are growing up in an era where they are being taught there is no objective truth. Whatever I think to be true is true. Whatever you think to be true is true. Even if they are complete opposition to each other, somehow we just have to accept that they're all just both. Everybody's just true. Everything is true. And if everything is true, nothing is true. And so we've got this whole relativism going on. And so when everything can be true, now that means nothing is true. And so how are you supposed to teach truth in a world of relativism? And so we've got to ground our kids that there is truth and we can know it. And we don't have to ride on that wave. And then the last thing I would say is normalcy bias. So a normalcy bias is where we tend to just think things are going to stay and things are as they always have been, or as we have always thought them to be. And so we just tend to see the world, you know, if we grew up thinking Our particular political party is always right, or our particular diet is the best one and the most healthy one or whatever, then we tend to find things that keep us, that make us feel like we're correct. And we tend to see the world through that lens. But that's not always true. Things change, information changes, and we have to be open to that. So those things keep us from being able to think well. And so we just need to be aware of them and say, okay, well, let's learn some tools so that we can combat these things.
Did you know my oldest son, Paul, and four of his friends wrote a cookbook for kids a couple years ago? It is the first and so far the only real food cookbook written by kids for kids. And I have to give Chef Junior a huge shout out as today's podcast sponsor. This book is packed with 100 recipes that kids can make, and they're leveled from beginner to advanced. So your littlest kids and your teens can find so many delicious foods to love. Again, this is written by 5 kids. They put together this cookbook when they themselves were between the ages of 9 and 12, and it launched in 2020 when they were between the ages of 12 and 15. It is so inspiring for other kids to see what children do in the kitchen and what they have put together, and to read words written by actual peers of their own. You can learn more about the book Chef Junior and how our kids put it together, and also get some special bonus gifts just from our kid authors. Go to kidscookrealfood.com/chefjr. That's kidscookrealfood.com/chefjr for all the fun bonuses, background scoop, and ordering information.
I love that last one, normalcy bias. I would call that a fixed mindset, you know, yes, the opposite of a growth mindset, that we were always changing. And I think nobody likes to be wrong. It's an icky feeling. So we do everything we can to avoid proving that we are wrong. And so that is super important for all of us adults to embrace. We can be wrong. We are wrong. We're often wrong. We will be wrong. Yes. Right. Yep. And teach that to our kids and demonstrate that to our kids.
Yes.
What else? So what do you do in your home, like really practically, routines and habits that you have that have been able to sort of pass on these skills and practice critical thinking for within you and your husband and your daughter?
Yes. Okay. So the first one is we had to learn the vocabulary, right? So that's just learning what are the names of these logical fallacies. That's why I did the podcast. I keep the episodes super short so you can just learn them, right? So number one is just learn them. Number two, get really good at asking questions. Okay. So I love how you talked about curiosity with skepticism. Oh yeah. I'm all about healthy skepticism. So ask questions. When your kids are little, it's going to be things like, well, what do you think will happen next? Well, what do you think you should do first here? Why do you think this happened? Right. So asking good questions. And then as they get older, now you can ask, well, what do you think their motivation was behind that? What do you think they want you to feel when they say this? What do you think will happen when we eat this? Or what do you think will happen if we don't eat this? And so getting really good at asking good questions. Number three, use what's around you to spark a conversation. So I do this all the time with my daughter. If I'm on social media and I see something, I'll just show it to her and be like, what do you think? And I make her think about it. I want her to think, well, what are they saying? Is it true? Like I've got a list of questions that I go through to determine, is something true? Is something not true? Is there a fallacy here? If so, what is it? All these things. And so use what you're given. I would say number four is don't get upset when your kids question you. Hey, here's the thing. Middle schoolers, especially, and high schoolers, what do they love to do? They love to argue and debate. So I say, rather than saying, don't argue with me, let's teach them to do it well. Teach them how to look for both sides of an argument, to understand both sides. Teach them to question what you're saying. Now, yes, teach them to do it respectfully. I believe that should still happen. However, don't be upset when they question you. Don't be upset when they say, well, why do you think we should do it that way? Or is there a different way? Or I see it this way. Teach them to do it well. Teach them to think well, and then come back at them with a question. Oh, really? Why do you think that? Or why do you think this is wrong? Make them think, because maybe they are just reacting, but make them go through the process of thinking about why they're thinking what they're thinking. And then lastly, this is something that my dad used to do, and it drove us nuts. We hated it as kids and teenagers, but now that I'm a parent, I'm like, I see what he was doing and I appreciate it, is he used to do what we call narration. He would narrate everything. We'd be watching movies and he would be making comments about the characters or the scene, about why they did this or whatever. If we'd be driving, he'd narrate about, ads, billboards that we would see and be like, Dad, we know, we can see it. But what he was doing is it was his way of transmitting his worldview, the way he sees the world, his values and the things that are important to him. It was his way of teaching those things to us. And so we started to notice things differently that we wouldn't have noticed if he didn't do that. He downloaded into us a set of values that we all carried with us. And it was just his way of doing it. So I just want to say, narrate life. Tell your kids what you think about the world, about what's happening around you. They're going to roll their eyes. They're going to be annoyed. It's okay. It's still important to do it anyways. So those would be my top five tips for that.
Challenging stuff, to be honest. I mean, you're really challenging parents to be better people so that we can be better parents and raise better people.
You summed that up very well.
It's really difficult. I've literally written down year after year, like, my parenting goal is to ask more questions and stop telling my kids what to do or giving them answers, because that's our that's our gut reaction, right? Is we just tell them what 100%. To do, or we tell them the answer. And if we would just ask more questions, whether that's in response to a situation we don't like that just happened or in response to one of their questions, we would be such better parents. But it's difficult. It takes real cognizance and really being in the moment and remembering that that's your goal. You know, you cannot be on your phone and halfway listening to your kid and implement any of this.
No, yes, you said never. I am not a naturally good question asker. My husband he's very curious. He's always been a good one. I have had to learn it. I have had to work on it and get better. So it's a skill that can be developed, but you're right. It takes intentionality.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see people putting post-its on their bathroom mirror. Ask more questions, like whatever you need to do to hack your own weaknesses and make those into a strength. I like saying to my kids when, you know, if they don't like something that I've told them, I'll say, make it a conversation. Let's have a conversation.
Yes.
You know, I do want to keep that door open because, again, it's really easy. It's kind of our knee-jerk reaction to say, don't argue with me. This is how it is. And do we want to raise soldiers or do we want to raise critical thinking human beings?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Totally. So what if parents are nervous about this? Like, can anyone learn to be a good thinker, or are there some who are naturally better? Like, how do you talk to parents who are like, this sounds hard?
Yeah, no, I mean, there might be some who are naturally better, but it doesn't matter. Anybody can learn it, right? Anybody can learn how to do this. This is easy. This is super easy. Make it fun. So the place that I recommend starting is start with the vocabulary. Learn some of the language around this. Now, I'm not necessarily diving into, there's two types of logic. You have informal and you have formal. Formal logic is concerned with how the argument is constructed, and that's super fun to learn. Like, kids can learn it, but start with informal logic. Informal logic is just the logical fallacies. It's a really great place to start. It's a really fun place to start. And then you have the language. And once you get going down this road of starting to recognize it and learn the language for it, it turns almost into a fun game. So yeah, I just want to encourage parents, jump in, learn this with your kids, have fun with it. And I promise you, you will start to see it. You'll start to see it almost everywhere. because there's no shortage of bad thinking in our society today.
Oh, amen to that. What about our younger ones? Because I know you started with your daughter in seventh grade, and I'm feeling it for the middle and the high school kids. But what if I have a three-year-old, a first grader, a third grader? Any different strategies for that level of, you know, developmental age?
Again, it's asking questions, just the questions are going to be different. So again, because they're not going to necessarily have at those young ages, they're not putting things together in the way that a middle schooler is, but you can get them started in doing that. Asking them, again, things like, say if they're building blocks, okay, which blocks do you think should go on the bottom? And why do you think they should go on the bottom? What would happen if you put the round block on the bottom versus the square block on the bottom? Just give them different scenarios and interesting things to think about. Use what's around you. If you're out on a nature walk, ask them questions about that. If you are looking at a book, ask them questions about what they see on the page. That is the the number one skill is honestly just asking questions. The questions just change based on the age of the child. And are there some things out there? There's probably books and workbooks and stuff like that you can find. But I think the best way is just work it into your daily life. Just let it be part of what you do. Get curious. If you get curious, kids are naturally curious. It will bring out the curiosity. I think it's for adults. It's more of we have to be good at not squelching the curiosity in our kids because we don't have it, but they do. And we just want to give answers. And so we just have to stop giving answers. Well, what do you think? Like, ask them that before you just give an answer so that they can move on and get them curious about their idea. Oh, that's an idea. Let's try it and let it fail. If it fails, it fails. But guess what? That's how we learn. So that would be the biggest thing I would say. Questions are 100% the key to them being able to think well and to learn that skill.
That is so well said. And I totally agree with you that humans are born with such an innate curiosity, and we kind of teach it out of them. You know, yeah. We train it out of them, we squash it out of them. And it's more of a just step back. And so we know that little kids are very concrete. And so we don't necessarily need to say to a 6-year-old, well, what do you think about the source of that news story? You know, like that's right. No. Their brains can't go there. But no. I love how you talked about blocks and trees and the sky. Yes. Like, get outside, right? You give your kids varied environments. Again, this cannot happen on screens. Let's just be really clear.
No.
Curiosity especially for the little kids, is going to be with their hands.
Yes.
And then you get to talk about it. But if there's nothing to see with their eyes or touch with their hands, there's nothing to talk about for the little ones.
Yes. Yep, sure. You said it.
So, Kathy, what about some red flags that parents might want to look for that their kids are falling off the critical thinking bandwagon, right? Or is there anything and again, especially middle and high school, anything in their conversations, in their choices that you would say, okay, parents, look for this, pull them back in, you know, pump up the critical thinking conversations here.
Yeah. Parents aren't going to typically like this one, but I would say if your middle schoolers and your teenagers don't express disagreement with you, if they don't express disagreement with their friends, with the news, with advertisements, then you need to pay attention. Because again, if they're expressing disagreement, it means they see something, they're thinking about something, something's going on. If they're not expressing disagreement, if they just are agreeing with anything anybody says, they're not thinking. They're not thinking about it. And so, again, we have to realize that them expressing disagreement is their way of expressing what's going on in their head and that they're thinking. So rather than get upset, oh, you disagreed with me, get curious. Oh, why do you think that? And there have been, our daughter does this, and there have been times that I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. Actually, I didn't see that. And I think you're totally spot on. So we can learn stuff as well. And we want kids who become adults who don't just go along with everything, who don't just go along with everything their friends say, with everything that the news says, with everything that society is pushing on them. We want to have them be able to be adults that can think for themselves, that can determine, is this right or is it not? Is this right or wrong? Is this true? Is this not true? Is this something good for me? Is this not good for me? And why? And to be able to know why they think that. So let them do it. Let them express, again, respectfully, that still needs to be in there, but teach them how to do it well. I love what you said. Let's turn this into a conversation, right? So rather than just, no, I disagree or you're wrong, let's turn this into a conversation. I think that's such a great line to be able to do that.
This is another good challenge for parents. And when you talk about even disagreeing with peers, it makes me think of Dr. Gordon Neufeld. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he talks about peer orientation and how this is a great risk to basically our whole culture, because we need vertical passing on of values. Exactly what you talked about with your dad narrating his thoughts, which is so cool. And what's been happening in the last many decades, partly because of the school system and the way it's set up.
Yep.
Is that kids are becoming peer oriented, which means their primary attachments are to their peers instead of their parents. And it's causing them to push away from their parents. There's a lot of voices out there saying, oh yeah, teens are supposed to push away. Don't worry about it. Just let them, you know, let them go. They'll come back later. And Dr. Gordon Neufeld would say, no, it's really dangerous for kids to orient themselves to their peers because it does cause it's this horizontal passing of values, which means they're not learning anything new. They're replicating themselves based on what they see in their peers. They're absolutely not critical thinking. And so I just think like we need to focus too on that attachment and the fact that you are advocating for let the kids disagree with you. That is a great show of love. And I think the kids are going to feel that attachment in the fact that you're open to conversation and the fact that you're teaching them how to think and you're, you know, letting them think. We don't, if we raise soldiers, they don't love us. Yeah.
Right. And the caveat to that is we have to teach them how to do it well, right? We can't just have kids, I just disagree because I woke up on the wrong side of my bed and I'm angry today. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you disagree. Why? You need to be able to back it up. Do you have three reasons? Do you have proof? Do you have a citation for that? What can you give me? This is another skill that I think is so good that I, again, I didn't get, it wasn't even offered at my school, is debate, right? Is because the number one thing, the first thing you have to do when you go into debate and you get a resolution is you have to study both sides of the issue. You have to know both sides, the affirmative and the negative, equally well, because in debate, you don't know which side you're going to be called on to argue. Well, in our society, nobody does that. They don't ever stop to take the time to say, well, why this person that I disagree with, why, where are they coming from? Why do they believe what they believe? Okay, let me figure out. But how are you going to argue against it if you don't? You just get into a yelling contest and you start calling names and ad hominem attacks. There's another fallacy. And all communication breaks down. So when we can teach our kids to do it well, how to argue and do it well, I did it. I have a couple episodes on that. Teach your kids how to argue well, because it's a really great skill.
It is a great skill. And I think there's like a very fine, delicate balance between allowing our kids to disagree with us and to argue and really desiring that transmission of values, you know, from generation to generation. And so, you know, especially here at Kids Cook Real Food, we really want our kids to take ownership of their health, to take ownership of their nutrition. You know, I do it by building the practical skills, but it's kind of that similar balance between like how to think versus what to think, right? We want to just tell our kids what to eat and why they should care. But we know, we thinking parents know that it would be so much better for them to take ownership of their health. Do you have any ideas about how we can kind of pass on good food habits without taking away their critical thinking autonomy?
Yes, I think this is excellent. I have three things. So number one, teach your kids to recognize marketing tactics and propaganda. So here, for example, and just in my lifetime, what I have seen, I have been through the phase in the 80s where eggs were bad and butter was bad and meat was bad. Now, eggs are good and meat is good. You know, red meat is good. In fact, you should go carnivore and eat only eggs and meat and right, all this stuff. Okay, did the eggs and the meat change? No, they didn't change. The marketing of the eggs and the meat has changed, right? And there is specific messaging that is happening in the messages that we're getting about food. So if you can teach your kids marketing tactics and propaganda tactics, they're going to pick it up in food marketing as well. Food business is big business. And there is all kinds of, in every advertisement that has to do with food, there is some kind of, they're trying to get you to appeal to something, or they're doing some generalities, or they're cherry picking information, right? And so if they can recognize those things, it's going to help them themselves to recognize the messages around food that they're hearing so that they can sort through them and figure out which ones they can dismiss and which ones to keep. So that's number one. Number two, teach them to recognize appeals to emotion. Again, there is a lot of emotion around food and the marketing of food. And when you can recognize, okay, somebody is trying to make me feel guilty about that, or someone's trying to make me feel afraid, or somebody is trying to make me feel lazy or whatever, if we can separate the emotion from the food and we can just make wise choices because it's wise and because it's the right thing to do, that makes it so much different. I was listening to a podcast just yesterday, and this woman was sharing the messages that she got around food. And it, when she was too skinny, it was, no man is going to want to marry you if you don't eat. And then she started eating and she came into womanhood and put on a few pounds as she needed to do. And then the messages from the same people were, nobody's going to want to marry you if you don't stop eating. And I thought, okay, this is insanity, right? We don't need to give kids these complexes around food. Like, let it be what it is and what it needs to be. And so teach them to recognize emotional appeals as it relates to food and eating. And then lastly is, I think sometimes we have to let our kids experience and recognize the consequences of their choices. Sometimes that means letting them get a tummy ache, letting them get a headache, right? When they eat something that doesn't suit them, or letting them feel good when they do eat, you know, when they do eat well. Like, one thing that we really tried to do with our daughter is let her be the judge over if she's hungry and full, right? Because so many times parents are like, do you want something to eat? No, I'm not hungry. Are you sure? Here, have this. We don't want to get hungry later. And we totally teach them to override their own natural sense of I'm hungry or I'm not hungry. And so we really worked at, are you hungry? No, I'm not hungry. All right, well, then don't eat until you're hungry. Well, that right there, just that message is a huge one. So I just feel like those are some things that we can do for our kids to teach that will allow them to have their own thoughts and to think well about how they're feeding their bodies and the food that they're choosing without overriding their ability to think about it.
Sound like someone who's taken my No More Picky Eating Challenge, letting kids listen to their own hunger and experience their own consequences. Hopefully the fact that both of us are, you know, saying the same message means that it might be some actual truth, right?
Let's hope so. Yes.
Parents, Kathy has given you some fantastic homework right here. I really think that you should, you know, set aside a time, sit down, watch some commercials, flip through, you know, some of the advertisements that come into your mailbox unbidden and ask questions about what kind of appeals to emotions you're seeing, what kind of logical fallacies and marketing tactics and propaganda are coming into your home or being put in front of your kids' faces. And oh my goodness, it's actually fun. It's kind of fun to pick it apart. Mm-hmm. And kids think it's super fun because they're picking apart what adults have done, right? That's some real autonomy there. Oh my goodness. We have so much. We could probably do 3 podcasts if we had that kind of time. But for today, let's leave parents with a message of hope, Kathy. I do feel like that is your main messaging, that there is hope, that this is something that's really positive and really promising. So if you could encourage parents in one way or share your favorite success story, what do you want us to remember?
The biggest thing that I would just leave parents with is your kids, your middle schoolers, your teens, you know, even if they're younger, they're going to get to middle school and the teen years. They can develop discernment. You want them to. You want them to have media discernment. You want them to have discernment around all these different messages. And if you just teach them this one skill, give them some healthy skepticism, they are armed and they will be impervious to the messages that they are bombarded with every day. And it won't just be in one area. It will transfer over to the food that they eat and their health. It'll transfer into political messages that they're seeing. It'll transfer into advertisements. It'll transfer into things that their friends are telling them. This is just a skill that it can just be part of your daily life. And there's huge hope because I've seen these kids that once they have this, they're like, okay, I got this. And it's actually a lot of fun for them and for you.
That is so truly encouraging. Kathy, I think everyone should listen to your podcast. I'm going to get it in my player as soon as we hit end on this recording. Where should people find you and your information?
Yes. So the podcast is almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's just Filter It Through a Brain Cell. I recommend starting with episode 1. It's almost like a mini course. Most of the episodes are under 10 minutes long. I really design it so that a parent can hit play when they're in the car with their kid, coming home from school, going to soccer practice, and be able to listen to it and now have something that you both are learning at the same time and can have a great conversation about. I also am on Instagram, Filter It Through a Brain Cell. I like to post different things on Instagram, different stories and things. I have a free quiz either for you or your teen or you and your teen to take. If you go to filteritthroughbraincell.com/quiz, there's 10 different memes. I love teaching through memes and screenshots of articles and headlines and stuff, because I think that's just our life where we're at today. And there's 10 different memes. And I want to see if you can recognize the fallacies that are in it and then have your teen take it. It just makes it super fun. So that's what I would say. And get on my email list because often episode, but here's also a cartoon. Can you recognize the fallacy? Or here's a meme, and I'll sometimes put them there too.
I am so geeked that your podcast can be for parents and teens, because I've got two teens and a tween. And so there's a lot of learning, a lot of potential in my house. I'm so pumped. This might have to be like, I don't know, Saturday lunchtime listening or something.
Yes. Oh, I'd love to hear what you think when you get a chance to listen to some of them.
Oh, well, Kathy, thank you so very much. I wonder if you will be a two-time guest coming up in the next year or two. We shall see. But I thought this was fascinating. I really appreciate you.
Well, I loved it, Katie. Thank you again so much for having me on. And I love what you're doing. So keep it up, lady.
All right. This has been the Healthy Parenting Handbook Podcast. And I will see you back again next week with another expert who has the information you need to raise healthy, independent adults, because there isn't a handbook for that. But now there is.